Okay. They got themselves off the deck. Things are looking better. Willy Adames, Mike Brasso, and the pitching staff. We're going to briefly touch on Tuesday. Thanks for bearing with me not having an episode yesterday, but we're all in a better mood today, right? So let's talk about a series that you kind of require a sweep. You kind of need to go 4-0 now. I'll explain next.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, good morning. It is Thursday, September 22nd. Earth, Wind, and Fire Day is over. I'm Dominic Catronio. Thanks for making us your first listen of the day. I'm the post-game host on WTMJ for Brewers Extra Innings, and I'm the statistician of Bally Sports Wisconsin. Missed the last game because of on assignment, TBS duties called, but no more the rest of the season. We will be with you every single weekday. There will be an episode waiting for you in your inbox from now until the end of the regular season. So fear not. The final 13 games to go in the next 14 days. We are exactly 13 days from the final day of the regular season. Whew. Here you go. Here goes nothing, right? I'm recording this right after the Padres and Cardinals game has gone final. The Padres did shut out the Cardinals 1-0, and the no-hit bid from Blake Snell went deep into that game. Didn't get it. Pujols broke it up, but the Padres win that one. And the Phillies won in walk-off fashion in 10 innings. The Blue Jays were up 3-0, and then 3 runs in the bottom of the 8th, and then the bullpen. We're not going to get into it. But point is, as great as today was, the Brewers didn't get any ground. So as we start play tonight, the Brewers are still 2.5, essentially 3.5 games back of a playoff spot, and they are still chasing the Philadelphia Phillies. And the Phillies are currently 1.5 back of San Diego. And tonight's, keeping an eye on the out-of-town scoreboard, worlds colliding. Atlanta is visiting Philadelphia, so that's a huge series coming up for the Phillies. And San Diego, they are finishing their series today with a day game against St. Louis. So by the time the Brewers start their game in Cincinnati tonight, they will know for the most part, and they're about 2.5 hours ahead of our first pitch tonight, so maybe they'll know, maybe they won't know, of where they stand with San Diego. And then the Phillies are on the East Coast, but 30 minutes later than the Brewers. So Cincinnati Reds are the opponent tonight. Brewers have a 4-game series, and then their last 4 road games of the year. What an odd sentence to say with 13 days to go, but look, quite frankly, with the way the standings have shook out and the way things are looking right now with 13 to go, you can't be less than 10-3. It's almost mathematically impossible being down by 3.5 games at this point. If you go anything less than 10-3, it's over. I mean, it would take an epic collapse by one of the teams for that to happen, which at this point I don't think is going to happen. 10-3 would get you 89 wins. Is that enough? That's what we've been talking about since the start of the month, right? Is 89 going to be enough? You know 90 was going to be enough because it's certainly looking like 90 is going to be enough at this point. But is 89 going to be enough? The Brewers, that's their target as things stand right now. Just need to win, baby, win. And yesterday was a big step in the right direction. That game could have gone in a plethora of different directions. But the Brewers hang 6 runs in the final 4 innings of this game, headlined by Willy Adames getting the Brewers off the deck with a solo home run. We're going to briefly talk about Tuesday as well. But as we look at the overall landscape of things, it's very easy for the Brewers to have rolled over today. And yes, this started out slow against Taijuan Walker. That splitter was really working. Brewers were getting hits, but not a lot of hard contact. There were some weird plays by the Mets, too, defensively. But the way I look at it, it would have been really easy for the Brewers to roll over, given, look, Max Scherzer happened on Monday night. They lose a heartbreaker on Tuesday night. And then yesterday, to say, oh my gosh, really? We're doing this scoreless thing again? All right, I'm out of this. Let's roll over. But no, Willy freaking Adames. I tweeted these numbers, and I just want to reiterate them because they're absolutely amazing. I know we touched on his numbers on Monday's episode about how well he's been playing in September, and how hot he's been, and how he's been sparking, but it goes back deeper. It goes back to that road trip of the Cubs and the Dodgers road trip back in mid-August when things were really going hard for the Brew Crew. Here are the numbers for Willy Adames, including yesterday. His numbers since August 19th. A .320 batting average, a .385 on base, a .609 slugging, and a 994 OPS. The rest of the Brewers go like this. 222 team average, so 98 points better for Willie. A 305 on-base percentage, 80 points better for Willie. A 385 slugging. Willie's nearly doubled it. He's at 609. The rest of the team's at 385. And then thus the team OPS is 690. He's 300 points better than the team OPS. That ain't going to cut it. He's going to need some help. And as much fun as it's been to see Willie Adames tear this up and improve his season-long numbers, it is so hard to raise your batting average and to raise your on-base percentage this late in the season, especially for a guy that plays every day. You know, he had an 0-for-4 against Scherzer and the Mets on a Monday night. But aside from that, that's really one of his only offers here in the month. At the start, way back on August 18th, so right at the start of this hot stretch, he reached a season low, a second half low of 218 for his batting average. Okay, since that day, since August 19th, we just told you he's hitting over 300 since August 19th, but that's raised his batting average by 25 points. That is extremely hard to do. And it's increased his on-base percentage from on August 18th, it was 282. It is now over 300. Not great, but over 300 at 306. So that's an improvement by 24 points. The slugging has gone up. Slugging's kind of always been there this season because he does hit a lot of home runs. He was slugging 445 on August 18th. He's now slugging 480. So a 35-point jump in slugging. And now his OPS is well above league average, about 60 points above league average at 787 as a shortstop, playing premier defense, top five defensive shortstop in the game right now, if you ask me. He's carrying the team, but once again, we have to reiterate, he needs help. Rowdy Tellez, his batting average down to 202. He goes in these funks where he's only hitting homers and nothing else. You look at Hunter Renfro, he's been ice cold. Colton Wong got going a little bit on Wednesday, and then he went 0-for-4 yesterday. Jace Peterson went 0-for-3 with a walk. The bottom of the order, though, tip my cap to those guys yesterday. Caratini, Taylor, Mitchell, they combined for 4 of the 7 hits for Milwaukee. They also had a run batted in for Tyrone Taylor on his blooper. But for the Brewers, Willie Adames can't do it alone. Plain and simple. They need to find a way to help him out. So he finishes 1-for-2. He gets an intentional walk and a non-intentional walk with that home run. He's getting respect from the rest of the league now, understanding his talent, but the reason why they're walking Adames is because they feel comfortable pitching to Tellez and pitching to Renfro. And I'm not going to sit here and say every single move that Craig Counsell makes is perfect. I've disagreed with a few, including a few from Wednesday night, or from Tuesday night. But the move to trust that, look, Rowdy, they got a lefty on the mound. We got to go with somebody else. They intentionally walked to face you. They want to face you. Got a secret weapon, an ace in the hole, and Mike Brasso, who can hit lefties. You're not banking for a home run there. You're banking for contact. And he's been one of the best pinch hitters in all of baseball. And to hit the grand slam like Brasso did, it's a cherry on top. Because all you're looking for was a base hit. It would have scored two. It was a great situation for it. What a great move. It worked out in this situation. We're going to talk more about the next few games coming up here in the next segment. Before we do that, I want to tell you about one of our newest sponsors here on the Locked On Network. If you're feeling like you just can't quite get into shape, it's not your fault. As men age, our bodies naturally lose free testosterone, the man hormone. It happens to every single man. It can make things more difficult to stay in shape and be energetic and active. Remember when everything felt easy? You could go play golf. You could hang in there. You could maybe go for a 19th hole and hang out with your buddies. Then maybe early in the morning you had a workout. You can cook dinner for the family. It's a little harder now, right? So if you want more energy to counter the negative physical effects of aging, Nugenix Total T Testosterone Booster with Testofen will help you turn back the clock, re-energize your workouts, and get better results in the gym and help you look and feel like the man you really want to be. It contains the key boosting ingredients like Testofen and has been validated in 5 clinical studies to show boosted free testosterone levels in men. And because Nugenix Total T boasts free testosterone that the aging process robs, you'll feel stronger, leaner, and with more energy and more passion and drive too. Your partner will notice this difference as well. Nugenix Total T is the number one selling testosterone booster at GNC, and it can help you re-energize your life and help you get back the powerful, confident, good-looking warrior you used to be. Now get a complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T when you text MLB, yep, Major League Baseball, MLB, to 231-231. Test now and get a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, their most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help you get back into shape fast, absolutely free with just a text. MLB is the text. Just text MLB to 231-231. Message and data rates apply. Terms apply. Visit at eugenics.com/terms. Tuesday, I don't want to spend too much time. I watched a condensed game. I didn't get a chance to watch it live. I watched Francisco Lindor's grand slam in the backseat of the car leaving the Trop on Tuesday night. And it was just a, wow, that was a moment. It was one of those things that you feel for Taylor Rogers because he was kind of the piece of the deal that made you feel slightly okay about the Josh Hader trade. And let's be honest, Rodgers had been pitching really, really well before this early to mid-September funk that he's been in as of late. I mean, there was a headline in the game notes for a while about how well he had been pitching during Hader's struggle. So from the stretch of after the meltdown against Pujols and the Cardinals on August 14th, Taylor Rogers, over his next total of eight appearances, he went 8 2/3 innings, 12 strikeouts, one unearned run with only one walk and zero homers. That was really darn good. You're thinking, okay, they're riding the ship. Things are looking good. Well, then he allows a run in Colorado. He gets a hold, but he allowed a run in that game. And then he allowed four runs in the meltdown game that went 10 innings and the two-homer game, the four hits and five runs in the span of seven pitches. That crazy game on September 6th, he gave up four runs in that one. Then he kind of righted the ship again for the next five, but now he's allowed runs in his last two. He had a blown save and then thus fell into the win on Friday night against the Yankees. And then yesterday, or on Tuesday, of course, gives up the grand slam to Francisco Lindor. He's a free agent to be. I want to reiterate that. And I do want to spend a little bit of time talking about the bullpen later on in the segment here, but or later on in the show, but you're going to need him, man. Like, you can't cut bait at this point. You can't think like, oh, man, we can't go to that guy anymore. Like, no. You're going to need him to figure it out. Brad Boxberger, you're going to need him to figure it out. But maybe what you're going to see is them getting into the game sooner and Trevor Gott and Matt Bush getting a few more high leverage roles. And I'm not saying Matt Bush and Trevor Gott are perfect, but maybe a fresher arm. They match up better with a lot of righties that they've been facing too. So there's a lot of situations that Craig Counsell is trying to set up Taylor Rogers to succeed in. Another guy that continues to succeed that we don't give enough credit to, and it feels weird saying it, that he has been a little bit of a slump, but it's still deceiving at the same time, is Hobie Milner. Look, reliever ERAs are really tough to judge, and I don't like using ERA for relievers because, look, you pitch so few innings, and one bad outing can be three runs in less than an inning, and it will inflate your ERA because the sample size is so low. I look at FIP. I look at some other advanced stuff like that I don't want to get you lost in the sauce with. And I also look at what their roles are. I like holds, honestly. I think it really does tell a little bit of a mini story about a guy's role and what he's been doing. And for a guy like Hobie Milner, the big story with him is inherited runners. But for Hobie, look, he gave up the four earned runs in Los Angeles in a game that the Brewers were already losing on August 24th. And his ERA went from 3.54 to 4.22. And it hasn't really had a chance to recover from that. Yes, he allowed two runs against the Yankees over the weekend, but Hobie's been one of the most important pitchers on the Brewers. He's only got a 139 opponent batting average over his last 10 games. The opponent's slugging, it's all singles against him, too. He doesn't allow extra base hits. And yes, I know he allowed an extra base hit yesterday, but he doesn't allow extra base hits. In fact, on the season, he's allowed 12 doubles total. Out of the 53 hits he's allowed, yes, there's a few homers in there. He's allowed four home runs this season. So 16 extra base hits out of the 53 he's allowed. That's really darn good. I mean, you look at the overall season slugging. He doesn't allow a lot of hard contact. He keeps the ball in the ballpark, which obviously matters in today's game. Opponents are slugging only 347 against him. And that's both righties and lefties. That was always his bugaboo prior to coming to the Brewers. He wasn't able to get righties out, especially last season. Now he's being asked to get both sides of the plates out, and his splits are virtually identical given the larger sample size to righties, him being a submarine left-hander. He has been a heaven-send for the Brewers this season, a career high in appearances. He leads the team in appearances, his 63rd of the year yesterday. Think of it this way. He's now appeared in 63 games this season. Since 2018, from 2018 through 2021, he only appeared in 56 games. He appeared in 37 games with the Phillies in 2017, which was his previous high. But then he became a loogie. He started allowing a lot more runs. He started allowing a few more homers. He wasn't having good command of the strike zone. Brewers and everyone's going to look at, the rest of baseball is going to look at what the Brewers did with Howie Milner and be like, how did you do this? This guy was a loogie, as in a lefty-only guy, to somebody that can get both sides of the plate out, leading your team in appearances, being your fireman. The Brewers need this bullpen. And I know Tuesday was a meltdown, and I know it was frustrating, but it's the life of a reliever. And Taylor Rogers said it best in that postgame. When you're going well, no one wants to talk to you. When you're going bad, it means you blew the game and you probably gave up a few runs. I understand the pressure of the job. I still want to do it. I still feel like I can be effective. That is the mentality I want to hear from my man, right? If he sat there and be like, I don't know. Yeah, they hit me. What do you want me to say? You know, like if he was all defeated, dejected, look, you can be in a slump and still feel like you can get out of it. You can be rolling and be confused, like, how am I getting guys out right now? So I truly think the Brewers, yes, there's been a few blowups for Rogers. He's about to walk. He's got to prove to the other 29 teams, if the Brewers don't want to bring him back, that he is worthy of doing it. He was a closer in the first half of the year, obviously lost that role in July. He's not been a closer with the Brewers, and when he's on, he's on. When he's been bad, it's been really bad. But this is something I talked about back in May, and I'm going to spend a bigger bullpen segment coming up next, but remember what Josh Hader was doing? I was reminding you guys, it's not normal. Even 7-8-9 the last couple of years, it is not normal to be that automatic 7-8-9. I'm not saying it's an excuse for Taylor Rogers, and I'm not saying to go easy on the guy or anything like that. I still believe folks should be a little easier on her, but remember we've been spoiled the last 2.5 years or so of saying, oh, Brewers have a lead in the seventh inning. This one's over. It's done. That's not normal at all. So when things get a little rough, don't abandon ship. This is what every other team generally has to deal with in Major League Baseball. Quick little soapbox rant. But yesterday, look, positive notes. Adrian Hauser got back on track. Craig Counsell did trust the early hook. Hobie Milner gets the job done with the inherited runner. Yes, he allowed the double. Great cut by Garrett Mitchell there to make sure that run of Mark Canha didn't score. Trevor Gott, he's back. He's doing fine. Brad Boxberger, bounce back. You love to see that. Brent Suter getting a high leverage. Well, he was getting loose, and then the Brewers hit the grand slam. But how about that? And the weird thing, too, right now, the Brewers haven't had to hand the ball to Devin Williams as of late in combination of them losing and in combination of blowout wins. So I would really like to see Devin Williams get into the game tonight, regardless if it's a save situation, because they need to get him some work. Just happy belated birthday, by the way. Devin turned 28 yesterday. When I look at this box score from the last 2 days of the Brew Crew, look, I see Willy Adames continuing to carry the team, but I also see the Brewers trying to figure out the rest of this order, like we talked about in the first segment. Someone else needs to step up. So Brasso off the bench, that was great. Adames, home run number 31, that was great. Those were the only two extra base hits in yesterday's game. Then you go back to Tuesday's game. Adames had a pair of doubles, and then Wong and McCutcheon had doubles. So again, Adames, he's got a total of 3 extra base hits over the last 2 games. I mean, the rest of the team has 2. The rest of the team has 3, I beg your pardon. So Willie's got 3 on his own. In the last 2 games, the team has 3. You get what I'm saying? It's not sustainable. You need help. Again, yesterday, 5 of the 6 runs were scored via home run. Of course, the big swing by Mike Brasso. Where's the sustainable offense? Like we saw a little bit on Tuesday. When they were scoring early and getting things going, those 3 runs in the second, that's sustainable offense. I like that. They scored 5 runs without a home run. But all 7 runs on Tuesday were by the home run for the Mets. I'm not going to overreact to Tuesday. They blew up. I'm not going to overreact to a series loss because, quite frankly, it is kind of shocking to say that you really virtually didn't lose any ground. You definitely didn't gain any ground, but the other teams keep on winning. So not losing ground is A-okay, but in about 3 days, it's not going to be okay anymore. 13 to go, 3.5 back. It's going to be tough. All right, let's talk about the future. Let's talk about the bullpen. Let's look around the league here in just a second. The Brewers, looking at their options for next season, looking at the bullpen, looking at the roster, looking at 40-man options, looking at who could be optioned, who's coming off the injured list, who has major injuries, things of that nature. Let's just go through the free agents to be, right? Brad Boxberger, free agent to be. Taylor Rogers, free agent to be. Trevor Gott, free agent to be. Double-checking on Hobie Milner, I believe he's got one more year of team control, if I'm not mistaken. I believe he's got one more year of arbitration. But he's now eligible for arbitration this coming year. So he's still in the organization for another year. But then you're pretty controllable. Williams under team control for two more years. Bush will be under team control for two more years. Then you'll have Strzelecki, who's still on a pre-arbitration deal. This was his first option year. Jake Cousins was optioned earlier this year, but he's fine. Luis Perdomo. You've got guys on the injured list and Gustave and Sanchez. You look down at the minor leagues right now. You don't have any relievers aside from Topa that will be under team control for next year. I doubt Trevor Kelly comes back. What I'm trying to get at here, it is going to be a younger look in the bullpen, I imagine, next season, depending on what the Brewers decide to do in free agency this offseason. So you want to see them perform well, first and foremost, because most of this core will be back. Boxberger and Rogers are probably not going to be back. I would like to see them extend an offer to Gott. I would like to see them keep him around. I would also think to say that, look, Bush is going to have an elevated role next season. He might be the new eighth inning guy with Boxberger and Rogers leaving. So Bush will probably have the eighth inning setting the stage for Devin Williams. And then quite frankly, that's a good matchup too, because you get Bush with those elevated high fastballs paired with a curveball to then soft change, devastating change. I think that's a good tunnel there for hitters to try to figure out. That's something interesting to keep an eye out for. But when you look at the starting rotation, they're virtually all back. Eric Lauer is getting the start tomorrow, by the way. He's getting activated off the IL. I mean, Burns will be back. Woodruff will be back. Ashby will be back, depending if they want to make him a starter or a swingman again next season. Lauer will be back. Hauser will be back. He's still arbitration eligible. And then you've got the option to decide, well, what do you want to do with Jason Alexander? What do you want to do with Ethan Small? Is there anybody else knocking on the door, like a Robert Gasser, that you would like to see maybe get on the 40-man at some point? Caleb Boschley's pitched very well this season. He was a Rule 5 minor league selection in last December. So there's a lot of directions the Brewers can go starting-wise, but that's pitching. They're in good shape. So I wouldn't overreact right now to what the Brewers are doing with their bullpen. You know, like, why are they going to Rogers? Why are they going to Boxberger? We're like, well, it's kind of what they got. And Cousins been hurt for most of the year. Perdomo's been hurt on and off this year. Suter hasn't been pitching in high leverage. Strzelecki is still just a rookie. So all of these things kind of add up to, in these most important games, you understand what Craig Counsell is going through of like, man, who's my high leverage guy? Wait, oh, he just pitched yesterday. Oh, he pitched today. Well, all hands on deck at this point, man. So going with your veterans, going with the guys that you know can do it. Yes, they've been struggling lately. Maybe they get a day tonight. They would love some length out of their starters here these next few days. But it's one of those things that the Brewers just need to figure out what roles or lack thereof there should be moving forward. Because, again, the lack of Devin Williams, to me, might be something on the table. Do you start using him in an Andrew Miller deployment role where it's like, oh, my God, this is the moment of the game. Let's piece by it the rest of the game. Get Divin in the seventh or the eighth. Sure, it's not a save, but it's the most important outs of the game. I wonder if they're going to encourage that thought or entertain that thought here down the stretch if things get really tight. Looking ahead to this series with the Reds. The Reds, more injuries. Nick Solak's now out for the year. He fractured his foot. Looking at the starting rotation in this one tonight, it'll be Brandon Woodruff getting the start. Hunter Green is back from the injured list. Brewers have teed off on him and also struggled against him. Woodruff 11-4, 3.26 ERA, turned in his best start of the year against the Yankees last Saturday. So very excited to see that. And his follow-up there, Hunter Green 4-12 with just barely a 5 ERA. TBD for Friday for the Reds. It is reported it'll be Eric Lauer on Friday for the Brewers, getting his return from the IL. Saturday, Burns is back on the mound. He'll be going up against Graham Ashcraft, who's back off the injured list. And then on Sunday, both teams are TBD. It looks like that'll be either a Jason Alexander or a bullpen Ashby-type day, where Ashby throws two innings and then hands it over to the rest of the bullpen deciding on what they want to do. So things to figure out bullpen-wise, but you look at this league. You look at what the Phillies, as we talked about at the start, they're getting ready to do a series with the Atlanta Braves. Atlanta just got punched in the mouth by the Nationals. They're going to be pissed off, okay? This is your opportunity. This is it. And I know you got the Cardinals and the Marlins and the Diamondbacks. No. This is it. These four games. 3-1, You are the better team than the Reds. Even with the slumping offense, you are a better team than the Reds. You need to prove it. You need to go 4-0. You're having horses go. You got Burns. You got Woodruff. Lauer's returning from the IL. And then you can figure it out for Sunday. You need to go 4-0. Plain and simple. There is no other explanation. And you can hold me to it. If on Monday morning when we're sitting here talking, and if the Brewers go 3-1, you can hold me to it. Dom, you said they need to go 4-1. Don't let me say, I guess it could have been worse. No, they need to go 4-0. There's no more messing around anymore. The only way 3-1 will be okay is if the Phillies get swept by the Braves. But even then, you'll be disappointed in this four-game series, because if they go 0-4 and you go 3-1, you're technically not even in first place yet. You're a half game up, which is essentially a half game back. You need to go 4-0, especially because then the Phillies, assuming it's the Phillies who they're going to have to end up chasing, given the lead that the Padres have right now, they go to the Cubs, they go to the Nationals, and then they finish with Houston. Now, Houston's one seed is going to be locked up. You imagine they're going to be resting guys. Or there's another counter to that, too, that I was thinking about this week. You may say, the Astros are going to rest guys. They're going to be fine. Remember, the Astros are going to be the one seed, which means they're going to get a bye, which also means they're not going to see live game action for over a week. So for the season ending on October 5th, the wild card happens over the weekend, the 7th through the 9th, off day on the 10th, and then depending on which series the Astros are assigned, they could either start on the 11th or on the 12th. So they could be gone for a whole week. Maybe they are going to start their guys to line up for the next week. Keep that in mind for that final three games, because I think it's going to come down to those final three games, maybe especially the first game. So that's not quite over yet. But if it's the Phillies, they're about to hit the hard part, obviously. They're finishing up with their season series with Atlanta, and then the Cubs, and then the Nationals. By the way, the Nationals have been leading in hits in September, so don't sleep on them either. But they're still a better team than the Nationals, especially pitching-wise. It's going to get crazy, okay? It's just like buckle. And then, by the way, San Diego, after the finish of St. Louis today, they got the Dodgers next week after facing the Rockies this weekend. So they're not comfortable either. The Brewers need to take advantage against a team that they are better than in the Reds. They need to go 4-0 against the Reds, period, end of story. There's no other way to sugarcoat it. If you're going to make the playoffs, you need to beat the teams you're better than, including the Cincinnati Reds. Whew. Buckle up. I've got post-game tonight, WTMJ. Hope you tune in after the game. Take your calls and texts as well. Another podcast coming for you tomorrow morning. I'll have the post-game all weekend long. 5:40 start tonight and tomorrow as well. And then on Saturday, also 5:40. And then finally wrap things up at 12:40 on Sunday for the last four road games of the year. Wow, what a year. We're almost done. 2 weeks to go, y'all. Buckle up. I've been saying it all month long, right? This is real. This is it. It's real. It's cold now, too. How about this morning, huh? I'm wearing a hoodie right now on the course at Erin Hills. All right, that's it for this episode. Thanks for bearing with me this week on the crazy travel schedule. But we will have every weekday, the rest of the way, there will be a podcast waiting for you first thing in the morning. I'm Dominic Catronio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, keep on swinging.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.